Chapter 21. It was good of you to come, Daniel, but do you think Jesus does not know all this? Annoyed, Daniel looked back at Simon. He had walked all the way from the village at the end of a long day's work. Twice a slanting rush of rain had drenched him to the skin, and the night air, heavy with fog, had only chilled him and not dried the clothing that clung to his body. He had fought his way through the tattered crowd in the garden, and now that he had reached the door, they refused to let him approach Jesus. The teacher, they explained, was conferring with important men who had come all the way from Jerusalem to question him. Now Simon brushed off Joel's urgent warning with no more than a shrug. "Forgive me, Daniel," Simon said now, seeing that he had offended his young friend. "We are worried, too. These priests from Judea, they haven't given him a moment's peace for 3 days. They pretend to be so respectful, and they're only trying to trap him into saying something they can prove is blasphemy. It keeps us all on edge. Why does he stay here if he knows he is in danger? Why doesn't he hide till he's strong enough? The people need him. Come another time, Daniel. I cannot talk tonight." With the door shut against him, Daniel stood in the crowded garden. He wanted desperately to see Jesus. He knew now that the warning had been only an excuse. If he could have one word, one sign from Jesus, he might find the strength to go on working. For a long time he waited, lost in his own misery. Finally, Andrew came to the door of the house and looked out. "No use to wait," he called to the wretched crowd. "The master is very weary. He can see no one else tonight." A wailing filled the garden. Then gradually the sick and the lame, convinced that the man had meant what he said, began to hobble back toward the road. A few simply settled themselves on the damp ground, having no other place to spend the night. Presently, the door opened again, and Simon and Andrew and Jesus came out into the garden. They moved slowly, and Jesus spoke kindly to those who obstructed the way, touching them sometimes with a pitying hand. Firmly, the two disciples pushed away for their master to the outside staircase that led to the upper room. They stood watching till Jesus, carrying a small nightlight, ascended the stairs, went into the shelter, and closed the door behind him. It was dark in the garden. When the disciples had gone back into the house, Daniel moved forward and stood at the foot of the staircase. He could not bear to go away. He was sure he had not made any sound, but over his head the door opened. "Who is there?" Jesus spoke. He raised the lamp. Daniel did not dare to speak, but almost without thought, he moved into the small circle cast by the lamp and raised his head till the light fell upon his face. "Come up, my friend," said Jesus softly. The upper chamber was completely bare and clean. On the floor was unrolled the thin mattress on which Jesus was to sleep. "Sit down," said Jesus, and he himself sat opposite Daniel on the floor of rolled earth. "Why are you troubled?" he asked. "I came to warn you," Daniel hurried into his errand. "Joel says you are in danger. He says they have turned against you in the synagogue. He's afraid they will try to kill you." "Thank you," said Jesus gravely. "It is kind of you and Joel. Now tell me, why are you troubled?" Shamed, aware that he should not disturb the master's rest, Daniel sat struggling with his conscience. Then his misery spilled over. "Because I don't know where to turn. Everything has failed. Everything I hoped and lived for." "What did you live for?" "Just one thing, freedom for my people, and vengeance for my father's death." "Two things," said Jesus, "not one." "They are the same. I will strike for both at once." "Are you sure?" Jesus asked. The familiar tightness pulled at Daniel's mouth. He had come for help, not questions. "All I wanted was a chance," he went on. "I thought it had come at last, and I worked and planned for it. Then it all went wrong somehow. All I have is another debt to pay. Samson." Jesus was silent for a moment. "This Samson," he asked, "he was your friend?" The question surprised Daniel. He had thought of Samson as a burden, as a symbol of his own weakness. He had never thought of Samson as a friend, but now he saw that it was true. "He died for me. He didn't understand about Israel or the kingdom. He just died, without any idea what we were fighting about." Then, heedless of the master's weariness, forgetting everything but the guilt that had tormented him every moment since the day of the rescue, he poured out the story of Rosh, of the betrayal on the mountain, of Nathan's death, and the debt that Samson's sacrifice had laid upon him. "Yes," Jesus said slowly, "an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. It is so written, we must repay in kind. but Samson has given you all that he had. In what kind can you repay him? By vengeance. He did not give you vengeance, he gave you love. There is no greater love than that a man should lay down his life for his friend. Think, Daniel, can you repay such love with hate? It's too late to love Samson. He is probably dead. Then, as Jesus waited, should I love the Romans who killed him? He asked with bitterness. Jesus smiled. You think that is impossible, don't you? Can't you see, Daniel? It is hate that is the enemy, not men. Hate does not die with killing. It only springs up 100-fold. The only thing stronger than hate is love. The boy lowered his head, scowling at the floor. This was not what he had come to find. With terror, he pushed away the words that struck treacherously into his own weakness. When he looked up again, Jesus sat with his head bowed, one hand across his eyes. Every line of his body showed his urgent need to rest. Daniel felt a stab of conscience, but his own need was too great. He had to speak. I don't understand, he pleaded, but I know that you could save us all if you would. Master, why will you not lead us? There are so many, hundreds, thousands in Galilee who only wait for a word. How long must we wait? Jesus did not seem to have heard. He did not move. Slowly, Daniel got to his feet. As his hand touched the latch, Jesus spoke. He had risen too and stood looking after the boy. Daniel, he said, I would have you follow me. Master, a great burst of hope almost swept him to his knees. I will fight for you to the end. Jesus smiled at him gently. My loyal friend, he said, I would ask something much harder than that. Would you love for me to the end? Baffled, Daniel felt the hope slipping away. I don't understand, he said again. You tell people about the kingdom. Are we not to fight for it? The kingdom is only bought at a great price, Jesus said. There was one who came just yesterday and wanted to follow me. He was very rich, and when I asked him to give up his wealth, he went away. I will give you everything I have. Something almost like a twinkle of humor lighted for an instant the sadness of Jesus' eyes. Riches are not keeping you from the kingdom, he said. You must give up your hate. Daniel felt himself trembling. He was torn in two. Before the appeal in the man's eyes, he felt the whole fabric of his life about to give way, and the very ground beneath his feet like shifting sand. He summoned all his strength to battle for the one thing that was most precious to him. I made a vow before God, he defied Jesus. Is not a vow sacred? Jesus looked at him steadily, with a look he knew he would never forget, full of sadness and regret, and a deep loneliness beyond any reach. Yes, he said. It is sacred. What did you vow, Daniel? To fight, Daniel stopped, remembering the night in the passage, seeing Joel's face, trying to remember the exact words they had spoken. Thaisha's voice came back to him, to live and to die for God's victory. A smile suddenly transformed Jesus' face, the old smile, radiant, full of youth and strength. He put his hand on Daniel's shoulder. That is not a vow of hate, he said. Go in peace, my son. You are not far from the kingdom.